The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler back with you here on The George Show on 710 KNUS. Pleased to be joined in studio by Priscilla Rahn, the deputy chair for the state GOP. That's the Grand Old Party, the Republican Party. Good morning, Priscilla. Thanks for joining us. Oh, hang on here. My fault. There's a red button. I just pressed it. Say it again.
Good morning.
Oh, there you are. And I think we are also joined on the line right now by Christy Burton Brown. Christy, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning, George.
Hey, thanks for joining us. First off, we haven't had you on in a bit. Some of the things that have developed since, and I saw Priscilla at this, and Christy, if you were watching it remotely, I don't know, or if you were there, I didn't see you, but we had the Republican Rumble that we helped to host with the women of Weld, Adams County women, women of Greeley, regardless of how you spell it, up there at the Grizzly, regardless, up there at the Grizzly Rose. Now, Priscilla, you were there. What were your thoughts going through that? And by the way, stylish as always. You had a sweet hat. You were rocking a great hat.
My cowboy boots and everything else.
I can't remember. Did you have spurs?
I did not have spurs.
Well.
I was a safe boot wearer.
What were your thoughts?
I was really happy to see the turnout. I was glad that the candidates were there to talk about their issues and that you guys asked some really tough questions. It was great insight into how, you know, the pressure that they're going to have to be under when we get through the primary.
What about the format? Did you think the format worked?
I think the format worked pretty well. I mean, they're up there each race talking about the issues pertinent to the office. So I felt like it went well.
Christy, did you get a chance to see it in the rearview mirror or watch it live?
Yes, I was actually out of town in Nashville at a training, but I was able to watch part of it live and part of it after the fact. And I agree with Priscilla. I thought the moderators, including yourself, did a wonderful job. And I also thought it's just really good when people, when voters are able to see differences between candidates. And I do think this debate was able to highlight the difference between candidates in our Secretary of State, Governor, and Senate races and perhaps make it more clear who they want to select in the primary that's coming up on us in a month.
I do think that, and maybe people knew this going into it, but certainly afterwards, there are clear choices to be made. This isn't like two versions of vanilla. Like, there are folks up there with very different views on things. One of the takeaways that I had that I'd love to see built into these future forums is more interaction between the candidates. It's harder when you get past two, right? Like, we had three on the stage for CD8, could have had four. That would have made it more challenging. But when it was down to two, when it was just Ron Hanks and Joe O'Day, or if it was just Tina Peters and I like giving them the opportunity to ask more questions of each other because I thought it was telling what they thought was important and what was distinguishing about, I guess, them and the other person from that.
Yeah, I completely agree, George. I thought that was a really good element. And it is the Senate debate that I watch the most of, actually. And yes, the opportunity just to have that clear distinction, what one of them would go deliver on in D.C. and what the other one thinks is more important. Key for voters to understand that distinction, and usually candidates can bring that out in each other in a very unique way. So, well done.
I am telling you again how the sausage gets made. I pitched Jeff Hunt on maybe expanding that interchange opportunity for the Western Conservative Summit as well. Are you guys both going to go there, by the way?
I'm going.
Are you going, KBB?
I think I am once again out of town that weekend, unfortunately. But everyone who's listening should absolutely go. It's a wonderful event. I've been in the past. I know you both have been a lot. And just a great time for conservatives to get together.
It is the premier event of its kind. I mean, really, for the election season in the country, there isn't anything quite like it. There is, of course, CPAC. That's a little bit different. But for what we do, the Western Conservative Summit is kind of very unique. And I agree with you.
It is.
I'm sorry you're out of town again. I hope it's someplace nice and not Cleveland.
Is it? It is not Cleveland. The RNC actually has regional trainings there's states that kind of, you know, are similar or together. And I am going to present on something on fundraising at one of those events and, you know, get tips from other states so we can get back here and win in Colorado.
Are you starting to see, and I'll go Priscilla and then I'll go with you, KBB, are you starting to see certain issues gel with the communities out there that are going to become the focal point for this upcoming primary? We'll get to the general in November, but for the primary, what are the issues that you hear people thinking about in terms of, I'll give you some choices. Is it, hey, I want the person who is the strongest on election integrity. I want the person who has the greatest likelihood to win. I think that this candidate is both of those. I mean, what sort of issues are you hearing people talk about? Is it crime? Is it, I mean, what is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's all of the above, depending on who you talk to, what county you're in, what's important to individuals. It's such an individual choice. I don't see a clear path for anybody right now. That's if the election was today, doesn't necessarily give me an indication of who would win, because there's so much variety around what matters to individuals on any given day. But I do see more activity. People are paying more attention. People are going to the debates. They're hosting debates. They really want to try to make a decision. Most people I talk to, they're like, I'm still undecided, and they're waiting to hear more from the candidates before they make their vote.
KBB, what about you? What are you hearing out there?
Yeah, so I think a few things that I'm hearing from primary voters, you know, one, people are Republicans and everyone really across the board, but Republicans in particular, so tired of what the Democrats have done in controlling this state for the last almost decade. And at the federal level right now. So they want to see a candidate who's actually willing to go fight against the Democrats, who's not just going to go and, you know, try and get along. They want someone who has solutions, who has ideas, and who's going to push back against that Democrat control. So a true fighter for the people is absolutely something I think primary voters are looking for. Number two, I do think they're looking for someone who can win in a general election. We have made the mistake as Republicans, I think, of picking a primary, you know, winner who then does not have what it takes to go on and win the general. People don't want to repeat that. I would say the third thing I am hearing is our core values as Republicans. People want to see our candidates represent that, the pro-life issue being one of those. We do expect that our candidates are pro-life. We do expect that our candidates, you know, hold true to the Republican platform, whether or not it's the issue they're going to go campaign on. We want to see our candidates, you know, assure us that they hold the same values we do. So I think those are the things I'm hearing.
You know, you brought up the pro-life thing. And as you know, there is a distinction to be drawn between Ron Hanks and Joe O'Day on this. Joe has taken the position that personally he's pro-life. He's a Catholic guy, raised Catholic, went to Mullen, all that stuff, adopted. He has a very strong story about adoption, but says, hey, I just don't think America is all pro-life all the time. And so I'm more supportive of balance. On this show, in an interview, he said he would, if this came up in front of him, vote to codify Roe versus Wade. That's very different than what Ron Hanks said. Ron Hanks basically came out and said, I am pro-life and there are no exceptions. He even went through a story of saying, hey, look, I used to be a guy that said I'd leave open the possibility under science, some medical stuff, but I've had enough doctors testify before me that they've never, ever run into that circumstance that I find that compelling. And basically, without saying these words, there are no exceptions for him. Is there room in the Republican Party to vote for each of those people on that issue? And when you talk about a pro-life position, I agree with you. I think the Republican Party is pro-life. Can each one of them coexist in a party like that? And can each one of them be the standard bearer for the U.S. Senate race? Christy, what do you think?
You know, I think, George, I mean, I think the fact is we are going to see Republicans vote for each of them in the primary. So, and those are the two people on our ballot for the U.S. Senate race. I mean, yes, they do both coexist in our party. We are the Big Ten party. Not everyone agrees 100% on every issue. I think, you know, anyone who's familiar with my background knows I am 100% pro-life. I believe we should be protecting every child. There's no way on earth Roe versus Wade should be codified into law. It was an absolutely ridiculous decision, and even Ruth Bader Ginsburg thought that. So I think, you know, from a constitutional perspective, very unsound decision. From my life and civil rights perspective, a terrible decision in our nation's history. And I think that is the position of the Republican Party. I think when we look at the Senate race, people are going to have to make that choice and decide who they're going to cast their vote for. But I think, George, I would say again that what people are going to look at in that race is not only the issue of life, they're also going to look at who can go on and defeat Michael Bennet in November. That's a huge thing I'm hearing in that race, that people are trying to figure out as they decide who to cast their vote for, who can go on to win, because Michael Bennet is extremely vulnerable this year. So, you know, I think that's one of the races that has a tough decision, as really any race that has a primary does. There wouldn't be people reaching the primary if they didn't have great qualifications for the job. So people are going to have to make their choice there.
Priscilla, thoughts on that?
No, I agree with Christy. For me, I'm definitely pro-life, and I think that there are better ways to help young moms and preserve life that's more, you know, humane. I don't like the rhetoric about who we are as Republicans when it comes to abortion. I mean, the left tries to paint this narrative that we don't care about, you know, moms and women and situations, when the opposite is true. I'd like to see us have better policies that support life and have more incentives for life. Mm-hmm. So I think for every problem, there's a solution. And I think we need to continue having these conversations so that, yeah, it is a civil rights issue for me as a Black woman. And I see the data and I see the targeted abortion clinics in our neighborhoods. That's a big issue for me. So I'd like to see a lot of changes happen.
This is one of those issues that it's always lurking around there in politics, but this year, because of this leaked Samuel Alito opinion, it has become more front and center, and it's going to make it more of a talk topic. But then something happened yesterday, this horrible massacre of 21 people, two teachers, 19 students in a second through fourth grade school called Robb Elementary down in Uvalde, Texas. Does that, Priscilla, also bring to the front now in terms of a conversation? I don't think we asked a single Second Amendment question of any of the candidates. Does that make that issue now something that's going to be front and center for the campaign? Or in a weird, regrettable way, is this one of those things that we'll talk about it for a few days, but it's happened so much, we're just going to move on to the next shiny object here in a couple of weeks?
Well, first, I'd like to say, as an educator and a parent, it's the most traumatic news that you can hear, and you never get used to it. It's never okay, and you always reflect on these situations about how do we fix this problem. First, we need to respect our Constitution. It is what it is. But I see the mental illness in our children every single day. It's getting worse.
Really?
Yeah. And
what do you think is causing that? Like, when you're interacting with these kids, do you have some sense of, is it a genetic thing? Is it an environmental thing? Is it ingrained in them through conduct? I mean, what's doing it?
It's a combination of a lot of things. When we look at the data and we break it down, we can see, you know, children who grow up in two-parent family homes tend to do better. When we're looking at nutrition or biological imbalances, those things can happen. It can be social too. So there are a lot of reasons why we see discipline issues in our kids growing up. But I know that we need to track it. We need to respond to it at the early. We see this behavior in elementary school. You can see the trajectory that children are on from a very, very young age. And when they get to the point when they're 18 years old and they have a track record and nothing's been done, someone's to blame for that lack of response. And so I believe we need to have more security in our schools, and we need to have more classes for our young children about how we treat other people and how we respond to our anger and when we disagree or we want something. But that's not happening in our schools right now. The cultural training and character training, we're not really teaching kids about character. Other things are flooding into our schools that we're being asked to teach that are perpetuating the problem, is what I'm seeing.
Christy, as you listen to that and you're dealing with the aftermath, it's less than 24 hours old, this kind of an issue. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be something that, you know, 6 months from, well, I'm doing horrible math. Yeah, a little less than 6 months from now, we'll do the general. Is this issue going to be front and center in that general election conversation? And if so, what room, if any, is there in the Republican Party to discuss a response to a mass shooting like this?
Yeah, George. I mean, I think it's front and center right now. And I think you know, it's always brought back up whenever it happens yet again, another senseless tragedy where children are killed, innocent people are killed. And in two of the most recent shootings, it's 18-year-olds doing the shootings. And I think there is a lot of room for Republicans to step up and find solutions. I think, of course, we're going to have different solutions than the Democrats are going to have, because they tend to blame objects rather than people. And we think, and Priscilla, I think, described it very well, seeing it firsthand in a school herself as an educator, that there are, you know, such a lack of solutions on mental health issues. We need to zero in on that. We need to do things to fix that. Both, and I'm not saying government's the answer either. I'm saying there's cultural community issues that we can do to solve that. And then I do think there's more that we can do through government related to the school system. But I think school resource officers, and having a real conversation on that and better safety and security in our schools is essential. And I think Democrats often evade that. And they say, you know, we don't need to do that at schools. But look what happens at schools when we don't have enough security and safety for our kids. I mean, good people with guns do stop bad people with guns. We know that's true. And so I think instead of Republicans just saying the Democrats are wrong on their gun control solutions, we need to say, here's a better solution. Here's what we found would work. We do need to push for that.
One thing that I'm going to play this quick clip from you from a guy named Sergeant Eric Estrada, no relation to the Chip superstar from the 70s, but he gives an account that addresses at least the school resource officer part. Listen to this.
He exited his vehicle and was actually met by a school officer who engaged him with gunfire. However, unfortunately, the shooter was able to make entry into the school where he started shooting inside the classrooms.
Now, I'm a big believer in having uniformed law enforcement at schools, and I do think it deters. It won't deter everybody, but I do think it deters. There will be more that has to come out about this story, because one of the other clips that we have, and I'll just play it for you here, suggests this kid just didn't show up with a gun.
The preliminary report tells us that he had body armor and he had a rifle. We don't know what type of rifle he had. That's under ATF investigation.
The body armor thing is an issue as well, and I'm anxious to hear what happened with the exchange of gunfire. You know, Miami-Dade, after Parkland, the whole state of Florida passed a law, or maybe it was just a gubernatorial edict, I can't remember which, that said every single school is going to have a school resource officer. And so the police department, and there is one for just the school district of Miami-Dade, exploded from about 225 police officers to 500. And they are in every single school, and they're now public school, and they're now starting to progress into charter and into private schools as a response to this. I know that has a deterrent effect, but as it sounds like what we're hearing here is that isn't the only answer. Priscilla, what do you think?
Well, it's not fair that all kids don't have the protection, the equal protection that some of these Democrat legislators, I mean, when I hear Obama talking about the tragedy when his children get to go to private schools that have security, you know, it's not even an equal conversation. So if it's good enough for them, it should be good enough for all of our kids to have an armed security guard protecting our children at school. That's what I think.
Christy, again, I could talk to you guys all morning, but we're out of time on this segment. Last thoughts as we get ready to see ballots drop, not Monday, but I think maybe a week from Monday. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, and George, I'll just say, I think your point on there's more issues than just a resource officer, I 100% agree. And I think that is why Republicans have to be solution finders, problem solvers. We have to go out and not just point out how the Democrats are wrong, but bring real answers to the table. And that includes really investigating issues and researching them and analyzing them and coming with real solutions to the table, whether we are talking about school shootings or whether we're talking about the life issue, whether we're talking about gas prices and, you know, choice in education and public safety in our communities. So I think that's what our candidates need to focus on between now and the primary. What are their solutions? How are they going to convince these voters who are still undecided in the primary that they are the best person for the job, that they hold our values, and that they can go win in November? So that's what I think I see our candidates doing. They're going to keep doing it. And we need every Republican out there to vote in the primary. Make your choice. Help us pick the best candidates so that we can win in November.
Christy Burton Brown, Priscilla Ron, thank you both from the state party. Thanks for we'll have you on again, of course. I want to keep having this conversation as we make our way through the primary period there. And I guess you're already scheduled for another 3 weeks. When we come back, we will be joined by Lauren Harper, a hero teacher from Room 107 in STEM. We'll continue this conversation today. Christy and Priscilla, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, Christy. Hey, when we come back, it's me, Lauren, and then at some point we're going to get you on there at 303-696-1971. George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Hey, Priscilla, do you... Text the studio directly on the 710 KNUS app. Get it free at the App Store or Google Play.
You gotta keep them separated.
George Brockler back with you here on 710 KNUS on The George Show. My thanks to Christy Burton Brown, the chair of the Colorado Republican Party, for joining us. Priscilla Ron, deputy chair, also, I've asked her to stick around, though, really for more of a conversation and reaction with our next guest. As you know, yesterday there were 21, at least 21 people murdered in a second through fourth grade school in Uvalde, Texas, called Robb Elementary. Two teachers, 19 children. And if you've had kids, and my guess is most of you have, you know that second through fourth grade is that 8 to 10 year old phase of innocence. It's just hard to picture the worst school shooting, second worst maybe in the nation's history, but the worst since Sandy Hook took place just about a decade ago out there in Connecticut. We just had a long show and discussion about the 3 year anniversary from May the 7th of the murder of Kendrick Castillo and the shooting of several others, and the fact that there were heroes in a room called 107 in STEM out there in Highlands Ranch. And one of the heroes, one of the teachers, I'm sure she's tired of me using the term hero, but one of those teachers that was in there, particularly insightful and probably affected by what took place yesterday, is Lauren Harper. And she is kind enough to join us before she has to get back into the classroom this morning. Lauren, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, George. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I've got Priscilla Ron in here. She is also a teacher. Mercifully, she does not share that horrible experience that you have, but I can tell talking to her that this kind of hits closer to home than some of the other tragedies that we see unfold, even at the shooting level across the country. When this happened, Lauren, I don't want this to sound like a stupid question, but how does this impact you having been in the situation you were in?
Probably the first thing that goes just through your mind is, and it's what I texted you yesterday, I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
This just sucks. There's no better answer. And the second thought that goes through my mind is, what I experienced when I was at STEM was, I'm really sick and tired that there's not even a moment that goes by as soon as it starts, the hyper-politicization of it all. Just starts, and so many of the aspects of pain that the families and the teachers experience are lost. It's who can get out the best soundbite.
You know, you bring up something important too. You may remember this, but right after STEM, Michael Bennett and Jason Crow came out to some sort of an event. I can't remember if it was at that school or nearby, like that night.
No, at Highlands Ranch High School.
That's right, Highlands Ranch High School. You do remember this. And it was an event that ended up becoming super political because they wanted to talk about gun control and other stuff. And, like, students actually booed them. Do you remember that? And they were like, this is not what this is about. This is not about the politics piece. For someone who has lived through it, Lauren, what should the community be doing right now to provide whatever support they can or process this? What should we be doing? Because I think it's natural, by the way, for Americans to see a problem and think, how do we solve it? But what should
we
be doing?
Honestly, like, if I was, you know, queen bee of the universe, I would just tell politicians, shut up for 1 week. Yes, we can address this and say there is definitely a problem. But so many people don't even wait before all the final totals are out or before they know what happened. I just automatically jump and say one thing or another. I would just tell them, you know, shut up for a bit. And you may just give the families time to realize what they've lost, pour into those families. I know a lot of people don't like the words thought and prayers, but you don't have to say it. Do it. Just pray for these families. Give it at least a day or two to allow just for the tragedy of the situation and the loss of human life to take place, and for people to understand that something horrible did happen. I don't demean or I'm not trying to belittle anybody that says we need to do something, because I am in that camp of, yeah, we definitely need to do something. But there's so often times when people are more interested in taking over the situation and making it their own and saying, well, this is a great opportunity for me to get my political point across so I can get reelected. And that's not as a victim and as a survivor and as somebody who had to watch my students go through this in the aftermath. That's just not something they need. They need a community that will have their arms, people's arms poured just around them in a hug and just saying, love you. They just need somebody to tell them at that time saying, we are here for you and we're going to do what it takes to get you through this.
Let's broaden this conversation just a little bit. I'll bring in Priscilla, who's also an educator. But you haven't been through this, but yet you guys in the schools still feel the ripple effects of this. How does this impact teachers? And I know you can see, do the kids know that it's going on, or is this more of a staff impacted thing?
First, I want to say to Lauren, you articulated it better than I could. I agree 100% that as teachers, we are highly impacted by any kind of trauma, whether it's a fentanyl death of one of our high school students in Denver that happened last week, to a school shooting, to anything that happens regarding the children that we teach every day and that we love. And, you know, we go to work knowing that in this day and age, we stand between our students and a perpetrator. Like, I know that I have to protect your children when they come into my classroom, and that is a heavy weight. And so anytime this happens, you think, you don't know when something like this is going to happen, and how are you going to protect yourselves? We go through drills all the time. I remember when I was a principal in Alaska right after Columbine, and we had to do triage training, and that impacted me, doing triage training where it was like real life actors with blood. And you had to decide, who are you going to help first in a tragedy like that? And we need more training as educators, because if we're not going to have security in our schools, then that the weight of protecting children falls on us as classroom teachers. And we don't have anything other than a door, you know, a locked door to protect us and our kids from a perpetrator coming in. That's not enough in a situation like this. Like, I want to know how this young man got into the school. Mm-hmm. That's scary, because we keep our doors locked at school, but there's just no assurance. When I go to school this morning, how am I going to make sure that my students are safe?
Priscilla, you're on the doorstep of retirement, which is shocking, because when you sit across from me, you think, unless you've been teaching since you were four, that's not possible. But and Lauren, you too, you look like you're 13 years old. You may be at a different place in your career than Priscilla, but do things like this, and Lauren, for you, it's different because you just lived through it, right? Like 3 years ago. Does it make you rethink your career choice? Like, I don't want to be an educator anymore because of fill in the blank?
There have definitely been times, especially right after the shooting, just dealing with different pieces and aspects of the fallout, where I questioned whether or not I should ever be a teacher again. And for me, it actually took leaving STEM and leaving that community and starting fresh with a new school. And that community has been wonderful and has embraced me. I just got back from a wonderful trip with my kiddos from D.C. And for me, it took a complete removal from that setting. And the setting I'm in now, love the staff, love the kids, and it taught me how to love kids again. And I did have to move down a grade level because I was afraid of some of the seniors. And for me now, I work with younger kids, and that's the choice I had to make.
Priscilla, do you rethink it, even though you're so close to being able to punch out? Does it give you pause? Like when you go into class today or when you think in broader terms about, you're right at the end of the school year too. Mm-hmm. That's the other amazing thing, Lauren, is that remember the horror of STEM takes place, I think, 2 or 3 days before the end of the school year. This is taking place. Thursday was supposed to be their last day of school. Tomorrow was. Priscilla, do you think in terms of, am I coming back?
It definitely gives you pause. This is a serious thing. Teachers that I know and administrators that I know are walking away from the profession. We've had multiple teachers leave this school year because of the problems at schools, the abuse, the trauma, the fatigue. We have teachers and administrators finishing out the school year and calling it quits in education for good. So I think you don't feel anything if you don't look at something like this and go, man, can I make it another few years to retirement? Is this going to get better? Is it going to get worse? But to Lauren's argument, we just need some time to love on the community where this tragedy happened and not make this hyper political, because the rest of us that are in the school system that listen to the comments from politicians, it's very insensitive. It's like they don't understand. They've never spent a day in the classroom. They don't know what it's like to be a teacher and to have to be in the front lines to protect kids. And so for them to hyper-politicize it is, I wish they would stop.
Lauren, can you...
George, I would...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
One of the things that you said to me during the trial that has always stuck with me is that at the end of the day, the Castillos, even though we came away with a conviction, that at the end of the day, they still go home to a grave. And that's what these politicians need to keep in mind, is that from now on, at the end of every day, these parents are going to go home to a grave. And that's not something to take lightly.
There are 18 John and Maria Castillos today, and that's just the kids, or 19. And there's two teachers. There's a Lauren Harper and a Priscilla Ron out there who, by all accounts that I've read online and elsewhere, these were beloved teachers. These were like favorite teachers in this largely Hispanic community. Those families, the ripple effects from any murder are immeasurable. But when you have it strike a community like this and you have that many John and Maria Castillos, I don't know what the path back is. I don't know what normalcy looks like. For STEM, they redid your classroom and the area. They changed where the doors were and stuff like that. At Columbine, and we'll talk with Frank DeAngelis in the 8 o'clock hour, they redid that whole area. Anything to try to create at the Aurora Theater. They redid the entire theater. They changed it from numbers to letters. They changed anything they could do so that when people came back, they didn't see what existed before. And yet you can't help but be haunted by the memories, the ghosts of this thing. How we move forward is something I'd love to talk with you about. Lauren, I know you got to get to class at 8, and Priscilla, you got to leave. Can you guys stick around for another break, or do you have to go?
No, absolutely. Yeah, I don't have kids today. I'm just putting in grades.
Okay, well, give them all A's. No, I'm kidding.
I think I should.
That's the me from school talking right there. We'll have a few minutes left when we cut away for a break. When we come back, more of Lauren Harper and Priscilla Ron and me, George Brockler, on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
George Brockler, News Talk 710 KNUS.
George Brockler back with you here on 710 KNUS. Still on the line with us right now is Lauren Harper. Lauren, I got to leave you on hold for just a second. Sorry about that. Want to get caught up on what's going on elsewhere with our good friend Gabe from Alpine Planning. Gabe, what's the word out there in the market?
George, tough morning this morning.
It is tough.
Obviously, all their thoughts and prayers go out to the parents and families, and so I'll keep it short today, sir. Starting off relatively flat, actually bouncing in between the green and the red now, but currently Dow down 14, NASDAQ is off 12, and the S&P is off 2. We just think this volatility is going to continue. Amy is actually doing a few conference calls today, so I'll know she'll have a good update for you guys tomorrow, but I want to give you time to continue speaking with your guests. So we'll speak with you tomorrow, George, and appreciate everything.
Gabe, love you for that, and we'll have you on in better times, too. It's always a great conversation. Alpine Planning Group is a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. These are good folks. Investing is a matter of trust, and they are prepared to earn yours. Call them at 303-843-0918, 303-843-0918. Call them today. Thanks, Gabe. I appreciate it.
You be well, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks, sir.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
Lauren Harper, thanks for sticking around with us. Priscilla, we still have you in here. I wish we could talk for another 2 or 3 hours about this, but I know you guys got to get back to, one, fixing grades. Thank you, Lauren, for all the kids that need that done. And Priscilla, you still have to teach for another week. Lauren, as you wrap up this school year and you try to process all this stuff, there are some folks that go through what you have gone through and say, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to deal with it. You haven't taken that approach. You've been very forthcoming and open, and even with us, about what you're going through and things that are happening. Does something like this out of Texas cause you to want to be more engaged, more active? What does that look like as you try to process this?
Definitely as this happened yesterday, I kind of just and it has been a growing realization that I have been through a situation, and I'm sure Frank will talk about this. I've joined the club that nobody wants to have a membership to. And it's something that the only people that helped me during that time were people that knew exactly what I was going through. And there were two individuals from Columbine, two fellow teachers that came to me and said, "We know." And that's all I need, is that somebody who understood. And for me, that's kind of what I want to be now for others, is that anybody going through this, especially as a teacher, just to be there and say, "I know."
That is interesting. I don't know if there's such an organization out there, but honestly, if we could figure out a way to help get you in touch with the school district down there or something, again, coincidentally, in June, in the middle of June, I'm supposed to go down there and talk to the school safety people down in Texas about STEM. I mean, and it's it's being held in San Antonio, of all places. I mean, the coincidence, the small world stuff. Let me see if I can't figure out some information to get out there, Lauren, off air, and I'll try to shoot that to you and hook you guys up, because I do believe that you bring something to the conversation. None of these other quote-unquote experts can, just because you've lived through it personally. Priscilla, as we wrap up here, and we only have a couple minutes left, when something like this strikes, I mean, you and I talked off air, the questions generally turn to, what in the hell is going on? Why is this going on? I mean, there is no one silver bullet, forgive the pun, to fix this, but what's going on? What the hell?
Well, I'm thinking, first, I'd love the faith community to reach out to schools in their neighborhood and just be available to talk with kids and build relationships. We've lost that connection in a lot of our schools. They've been pushed out. Pastors and youth pastors coming in and just building connections with our kids who maybe don't have parents, or single parents, or they have an issue going on, just to help give them some life and some hope. And the other thing I would say to teachers who are feeling a lot of fear right now is to make sure that they engage in self-care and take some time to really take care of themselves and talk to their students. And, you know, I know today I'm going to check in on my kids a lot and say, "How are you doing today? You feeling okay? Is there anything you need?" And we do that every day. But I think when something like this happens, you're extra diligent in watching your kids and paying attention to what's happening.
Lauren, I've got about 30 seconds, 35 seconds. What would you say as wrap-up comments?
I mean, I would agree with Priscilla that allow the faith community to come in. If it wasn't for the Christian community, I don't think I would have survived. Personally and spiritually, I don't think I could have done anything without them. Let the church help, and let people pray over you and see what God can do. But most of all, just reach out to these people, love on them, pray for them.
Priscilla Ron in studio, educator, getting ready to go back into the classroom today, heavy day, and Lauren Harper, hero from 107, still in the classroom teaching even after what she went through. My thanks to both of you for helping us advance this conversation.
Thanks, George.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, Lauren. I'll be in touch with you about that Texas thing, too. Thank you very much. Hey, look, when we come back, Frank DeAngelis, you have to know that name if you've spent 15 seconds in the state of Colorado. From Columbine. We'll have a conversation with him, too. I know it's not a light day, but it's an important day, and this is a conversation we can have together right here on The George Show on 710 KNUS.
Heavy traffic heading into downtown, jammed up on I-25 both sides of the highway. Had a wreck northbound near 20th Street. That's been cleared. Now out of Niwot, big crash. Westbound Highway 119, Diagonal Highway shut down at Highway 52. That's Mineral Road. And a wreck jamming 88th and Tower Road. I'm Susan Phelan.
This report is sponsored by Discover. When it comes to your credit card, Discover believes in having real people available 24/7 to help answer your questions. Discover. Exceptionally common sense.
Mark Levin believes we're seeing a trend.
We don't need open borders for any reason, except the Democrat Party wants open borders, and so do their surrogates. United States of the Democrat Party, that's what I've been calling it. You're looking at it. Shortages, inflation, impoverishment, babies going hungry, people going without fuel, on and on and on. The United States of the Democrat Party turns America into a third world nation.
Mark Levin, weeknights at 7 on News Talk 710. KNUS.
Peter Boyles here for my friends in American Financing. The average cost for medical care in retirement continues to grow, with newly retired couples spending 5% more last year. These costs add up quickly, especially once you're in a fixed income. And that's why I recommend calling American Financing. Talk to them about a cash-out refi, and you can access some of your equity as cash, money you can use for future medical care or anything else that you might need in retirement. There is no pressure, no upfront, no hidden fees. Plus, if you start soon, you can skip up to 2 payments, and you may close in as fast as 10 days. Lock a low rate in now before they're all gone. Pre-qualify in as little as 10 minutes. I trust American Financing. Call American Financing today. 303-695-7000. 303-695-7000. Apply online. AmericanFinancing.net. AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334. Regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
If the last couple of years have taught us one thing, it's to value the things we can control. And addressing hair loss is no exception. My friends at Advanced Hair Restoration can reverse years or even decades of hair loss with their simple one-day treatment. Your own natural hair begins to regrow the very next day, and your new hair is backed by the Advanced Hair Guarantee. It works for bald spots, receding hairlines, thinning hair, men and women. Younger, wiser, Advanced Hair can address many patterns of hair loss. Their advanced FUE treatment has changed tens of thousands of lives, people just like you. So set up your free consultation, 720-459-HAIR. Get special financing, 250 free hair grafts, plus $250 off. Value the things you can control and start regrowing your own natural hair today. 720-459-HAIR. Be sure to ask about the Advanced Hair Guarantee and view the before and after pictures right now at advancedhair.com.
When you take the time to really get to know your body, you find that the root causes of its aches and pains are usually simple. The older we get, the more exercise we undertake, and the more injuries we sustain, the more inflammation our bodies suffer from. It's so simple. And my answer to that pain is Relief Factor, which I discovered years ago and take every single day to great effect. It helps the body to fight off inflammation, and I've never found anything that worked better in my life. I can't recommend it enough. 70% of the more than 500,000 people who have tried Relief Factor end up ordering more. That's because it works for them the way it works for me. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? Your first step to becoming pain-free should be to order.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.